this is my weekly podcast, Adventures with Postpartum Depression, a show dedicated to sharing stories and spreading awareness about maternal mood disorders. For show notes and more information, please go to my website, ppdadventures.com. There's also a Facebook page, facebook.com/ppdadventures. And now, on to the show. Hello, adventurers. Welcome to episode 60. This week I have an interview with the lovely Fiona McDonald, who is from Ottawa, Canada. But first, I wanted to catch you up on the book that I've been writing, my memoir. It's also called Adventures with Postpartum Depression, because, hey, once you find a name, why do you need two names for a podcast and a book? You can just use the same name. And, you know, and let me hit pause and give you a little bit of honesty. I'm doing this intro, and this is my second attempt at it. The first one, I started stumbling all over my words, and I was just like, ah, and I, you know, I hit stop and started recording all again. And I like to reveal the imperfections for all of you living life out there. It's not like I sit down and get this all done perfectly at once, though I do try to just stick with one, like, original recording so that you get all the me stumbling over my words and mispronouncing things and the long, lengthy pauses while I'm trying to, like, figure out what I'm thinking through in my head, because this is real, this is mom life. But the book. I am at my parents' house today. I'm recording this a little earlier, a couple days before the show's going to go up on the internet. At my parents' house. Today is a Sunday, and I am in charge of the book fair this week at Pippa's Preschool. So I'll be going over to the preschool in a couple hours to set up the book fair with a few volunteers. But before I did that, I wanted to take a little me time. Yesterday was Nathan's day for me time. We don't do this every weekend. Some weekends it's lots of family time, or there's just things on the schedule, like, you know, a birthday party for one kid and, you know, who knows what else. But on several weekends, at least once a month, if not twice, we just switch off. And he likes to go to the racetrack on Saturdays. He loves horse races. He's loved this since he was like 18. And he goes to this seminar and he has friends there and it's his scene. And that's what he likes to do on Saturdays. So then I take Sundays. And since I was going to be taking time for the book fair, I thought, you know, I should probably leave way before that, because the book fair, it's actually, I'm dorky and nerdy about that stuff, but I do need some time to, like, work on the podcast, work on the book, and just take care of myself. And if all I do is the book fair today, then I knew I would get grumpy and feel like, oh, Nathan got to go away for, like, you know, 6.5 hours yesterday, and I only went 3. I have found that when it comes to, like, the time we take for ourselves, I really need it to be equal, or roughly equal, or maybe me a little bit in the lead between me and Nathan. Because if he goes out one day to the track, there was part of me this morning that was like, well, I don't have to be at book fair until 3, so maybe we should, like, head out to the zoo and have a family day together. It's like, no, the kids like having their their time, you know, kids and daddy without mommy around, and that's important. And I would just get bitter, and I would feel like my buckets were drained, and, you know, like self-care is, I think of it as a houseplant that just needs constant tending. You don't water the houseplant once and all is good. It's like, no, you gotta make sure it's getting enough sunlight, and you gotta water it every week or two or whatever that plant needs. And, you know, you have to repot it. I'm getting ready to repot all my houseplants. I haven't done it in years, and it is time. So I'm working on my self-care today by being here, and I just finished writing the acknowledgments page or two pages for my book. It was the last bit of original writing I needed to do. I've got prologue, I've got the epilogue, I've got 28 chapters in between. I've even written and finished all the back matter of, like, some book club questions and a big long resources section, so that anyone who reads the book can find places to get help for postpartum depression or for the transition to motherhood. So I got all of that done, and I just had this big honkin' write the acknowledgments page already, because I knew once I did that, I can hire a proofreader, I can format the book, and I can get this damn thing, you know, published already in the next couple of months. So I'll be excited to keep you guys posted about that. I'm going to take a sip of my tea right now. I know, bad form to be drinking while I'm on the air, but I've been congested. I don't know if I've been assuming it was a cold, but I also quit caffeine, and I was reading up on caffeine withdrawal, and apparently congestion and flu-like symptoms are part of caffeine withdrawal. So, oh, hey, maybe I've just been congested horribly, miserably congested for the past couple weeks because I've been drastically cutting back my caffeine. And I feel today like I'm coming out of the caffeine withdrawal darkness. I'll have a bigger episode coming up soon of all the health changes I've been making. So, gratitude page or acknowledgement page. Acknowledgements is just a really fancy, boring way to say gratitude. Gratitude just sounds a little more like meaningful to me. So that's all written. So I've got Nathan needs to read it this next week or two and really, really putting the final nails in this project. I'm gonna release it into the world. It's hard to do because it's a story of 1 year in my life and what happened, how I fell into the darkness, how I got out of it, and how I got better and how I became a better person. And it's weird though because I learned so much during that year, and so it makes sense to have a memoir about that year of my life. But I've kept growing and learning as a person, and I kind of sometimes want to dive in and like, I could revise this book until the day I die. And that's just not helping anyone. I need to like release it into the world and just write more books. And I'm very curious to see what my next big project will be. Obviously, I'll keep doing the podcast, but what will my next? I think I'm a person who really thrives on having a major writing project. I can't just be happy. Like, I haven't blogged much, and I would like to get back into blogging, but I don't think blogging is my life purpose. I think writing like an actual meaty book and digging into a topic. So I don't know what my next book's going to be, and I'm having to like be okay with that uncertainty for a while. So that's where I am though with the book. Really, really in the home stretch. And if you want to head over to ppdadventures.com, you could sign up for the newsletter, and you will get a free link for the ebook when I publish it, because I have a there's a company that will arrange it so that you can get any ebook version that you want, whether you want the Kindle or you have some other platform you use, and it'll set it all up for you easy peasy, so you get the free copy of the book. Unless you want to buy the book to support the show, I would love that. But we don't all have unlimited budgets for a reading, so I want to be able to give the book for free so that if there's some mom who wants to read it, she's not sitting there going, "Oh well, I wish I could have, but I couldn't do it." So okay, so that's enough about me and my book today. Today we are going to be talking with Fiona, who she experienced what her therapist labeled as adjustment disorder, which is, we talk about it during the episode, not something that I have heard used before for maternal mood disorders, but she basically had a mix of depression and anxiety, more heavy on the anxiety side, and was not coping well with adjustment to motherhood. And when I heard it, I really liked the phrase adjustment disorder because I think a lot of moms can relate to that. Not all of us. I think we all have different journeys, but I know I personally was like, adjustment disorder. Yes, that is something I could throw into the mix of explaining my experiences. But again, I'm not going to go revise the memoir again. It's done, it's ready to go. We hit on lots of issues during our conversation, things like breastfeeding and pumping, shame and guilt, the need for control, working on self-care. And then at the very end, we talk about the climb out of the darkness. Fiona is leading Team Ottawa in Canada. So I hope they'll have better weather and a little less snow by June. So look at me stumbling over my words. It is time for me. I'm congested now, but I was super congested when I talked to Fiona. So hopefully you can understand me for all the congestion. Also, Julian was home with the babysitter during our interview, so if you hear any screams in the background, that's Julian, but I think he was pretty well behaved and the microphone didn't pick it up. But it's all an adventure and it's all real mom life. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Fiona. Hi, Fiona. Thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So we're on Skype today because you're off in, is it Ottawa, Canada?
Yeah, the capital, in case people don't know. Capital of Canada.
And I shouldn't complain that it's cold here in Pasadena
No, I was
today.
just about to say, it's actually decently warm today. It's above, well, you guys are in Fahrenheit, so I don't really know what that is, but it's plus 10 Celsius here. So that's like really warm for February.
Oh wow. All right. I mean, we're cold for we got snow on our mountains right nearby our house.
Well, there you go. Our snow is melting, so we can compete.
So how many kids do you have? Is it just one?
Yeah, I just have one toddler. He's 2.5. His name is Sullivan.
Toddler told. That's so sweet. And whenever I say just one, I always want to like bite my tongue because one is like
Sometimes one is enough.
one is an army.
Yes, especially on the hard days, that's for sure.
So what happened with Sullivan? You're on the show, so you must have had some sort of mood disorder.
Yeah, so it's funny. I had always wanted to be a mom. I sort of knew about postpartum depression before I myself had it. But I guess you don't really give it much thought before it actually happens to you, I guess, because obviously, how would you know? My husband worked long hours. That's not really sort of the main reason it happened, but I'm sure it didn't help, that's for sure. So he was away a lot and he went back to work fairly quickly after I had him. So in Canada, we're really lucky to have a full year off. So most times, dads tend or partners tend to take, some time off, but for whatever reason, we felt like 2 weeks was sufficient. Looking back, like, oh my God, I don't know why I would ever think that that was enough time to have just the support that I needed. So at 2 weeks, he went back to work full time and I was sort of left with this very new thing in my life. And I had sort of had an unexpected C-section right before he was born. So they found out about 5 days before he was born that he was breech. And so the C-section was planned and, so that wasn't really a big deal, but there's always those sort of limitations that you get with having a C-section, not lifting and you can't drive and all that type of thing. And I guess I'd always battled with some form of anxiety growing up, but I never really called it that, I guess, where I always dealt with it through, exercise or being able to go out and be social. And then, having this small child, this baby, come into my life was sort of a shock to me because I always tell people it's like the only thing you've never had any experience before with, right? Everything else in your life, you kind of know something about. So at my 6 week checkup, I had gone in and I was feeling really overwhelmed, really, I mean, obviously emotional, you're lacking sleep. And, my doctor literally, I can remember, everything that happened. She literally just, I think, just said, how are you doing? And I just broke down. I was trying to breastfeed and it wasn't working for us. And I was pumping, because obviously you felt really sort of judged. I felt judged. I shouldn't say it happens. You just feel judged.
Right.
By other people, if you're not breastfeeding, and especially here because you get the year off, people sort of think like, why wouldn't you, so when I went in, I had been struggling that day, and I already sort of mentioned to my husband that I really felt kind of like I was drowning. That was sort of the only way I could describe it. I didn't feel like I could get up in the morning, I could shower, but I just would wake up and my sister was great. She'd check in and I would say, like, I just don't feel like adulting today. I don't feel like parenting. And I never really thought of it as an issue. I sort of just thought, well, this has to be sort of normal, right? Normal, sort of way of learning to have a baby. And so when I went in to see my doctor, of course she was really good and she asked if I felt suicidal. And then I sort of thought, wait a minute, like what, where are we going with this conversation? I sort of was taken aback and thought, wow, okay. Is this where we're at? And I was really lucky. I'd already been seeing a therapist for some other issues I was having. And so we had already had a follow-up appointment booked fairly close to when I had my 6 week follow-up with my doctor. And as soon as I went in there, it was, at the end of the conversation, she was like, yeah, you have, what they called it was adjustment disorder. So it was a mix of sort of that postpartum depression with anxiety. And I'd say more, I was heavier on the anxiety side of things, constantly stressed about his sleeping and pooing and peeing and, obsessive almost to the point where I marked everything down and I was, just had this such great anxiety if, when he'd be sleeping next or just to get a break almost, it felt like. So after that, it sort of naturally happened that we sort of shifted the focus of the therapy sessions to sort of through the recovery process and sort of, she used cognitive behavior therapy. So really trying to focus on ways to help myself sort of come out of this sort of bubble of anxiety and sort of look from a different perspective. But really, I didn't notice until, I guess, 6 weeks until someone else told me. I probably could have just kept going, I guess, without really feeling like there was something actually wrong. I just thought this was the way that it was supposed to be, I guess. I didn't know any better.
So the adjustment disorder, I've never heard that. Did that come from your therapist?
Yeah, so I guess it's just a mix of both.
That's so interesting because here, and I wonder if it's a...
maybe it's just a different term.
I don't know if it's like, I mean, it's all English, but do we, mm-hmm. I don't know if Canadian, like, I have no idea. I assumed it's all the same term. I know it's in England, they'll say postnatal depression a lot. But here, my doctors and therapists, it was always, they use the umbrella term postpartum depression, and then mm-hmm. that captures the anxiety as a symptom.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I wonder if it was more focused. I mean, there's always so, like, it's such a gray area, right? There's so mm-hmm. many sort of levels of anxiety and depression. And obviously, at that time, I was still coping. I was still getting up. I was still, you know, going to the gym every day with my son. I was, you know, going out socially, but I just was so overwhelmed. So I wonder if it's, I don't want to downplay postpartum depression or anxiety, but I wonder if it was just sort of a, like she called it sort of functioning depression or functioning anxiety where, you know, you're getting up, you're still doing everything, but deep inside, you know, you've got all these sort of, you're sort of faking it, I guess. You're faking it until you make it, you know? Yes. So I looked like no one would have ever known from the outside. I looked, you know, posting pictures on Instagram and Facebook, and I looked happy, you know, but inside I was just struggling. I had really, you know, and then I started having sort of intrusive thoughts. My intrusive thoughts were always about dropping him. And I could just picture, you know, really graphic. I don't know if we want to go into detail, but, you know, sort of graphic images of him falling, like if I fell down the stairs mm-hmm. or if I dropped him, whether purposely or accidentally. But they wouldn't happen for long periods of time. They would sort of just come and go, you know. But again, it was sort of always a thought that these were sort of things that, you know, were normal fears. And so luckily I brought them up to my therapist and she was like, oh no, but you know, those have a title. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that, you know, because I just thought it was sort of this normal worry that you have about your kids, you know, but obviously you talk to other moms and they don't have the similar type of worries. I have other worries. But so I guess she sort of felt like when talking to me, it wasn't one or the other. It was sort of just, I wasn't able to cope with adjusting to this new life. I guess that's the only real way to sort of describe it, I guess. I'm seeing her today, so I'll let you know.
Well, I mean, I love having a new language for describing it mm-hmm. because it sounds like did it feel hormonal to you, or did that component not feel like it was part of it?
Like hormonal how, would you say?
Well, like some moms seem to feel like they didn't have any, like they just feel like it's like their hormones flipped the switch. Like, you know, the progesterone's crashing.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like, I don't think it was necessarily hormonal related, only because I feel like, I guess, I just never really noticed the shift, you know? Like, I never had those sort of baby blues, I guess. I felt like I maybe just dove right in. Like, I don't know. Maybe I did. Maybe it was just the hormones never shifted. I don't know. I didn't ever feel like there was a time where I had felt really good and then I felt really bad. I just sort of from the beginning felt really overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. So did you ever need medication?
So I had, you know, and that's the sad thing. I sort of do, you know, I put this on myself. I always felt, and it shouldn't be this way, and I know that, and I'm supportive of, you know, women needing medication, but I always felt like I wanted myself, I can only talk for myself, I wanted myself to work through the feelings I was feeling. And not that I didn't believe that medication would help, I sort of gave myself a goal. I said, okay, if in the year of maternity leave, I don't get any better, you know, I'm still really, really stuck in this really awful world that I think I'm living in, then I would be happy to try it. But at the time, I was very motivated because I really wanted to feel and get to the bottom of my emotions. And I guess the women I had talked to who also struggled, who had gone on medication and completely their own choice, there was no you know, I don't want to make it sound at all like I'm against it. They just felt so much better that they sort of could move on. And I really wanted to get to the bottom of what I was feeling. And so I worried that if I did go on medication and, you know, that it would maybe potentially stop me from wanting to look deeper into what I was feeling. And a lot of that, I think, came from potentially my relationship with my husband sort of hitting a rocky phase at the same time, because I felt like he was really not there for me and not supportive. So I worried that if I'd kind of went on that medication, I would sort of just think, oh, everything's great, like, let's move on. But I knew there were deeper issues that I wanted to work on. And so I sort of told myself, you know, if you don't feel any better, you're not improving with just therapy, then absolutely, you know, medication would be a way to go. But at the time, you know, over time and working really hard at therapy, you know, things got better. Of course, going back to work really helped, you know, that sort of helped me feel more like, I guess, my old self and sort of connecting with what I was passionate about. So it improved over time. And then, you know, I never did end up having to go on medication, but absolutely, if ever it happened again, you know, I wouldn't think twice, just to sort of ease some of the, I don't know, complicational, you know, the sort of feelings that kind of go with it. You know, I think therapy is great. I think meds are great. I think whatever works for each person is great.
So am I allowed to, like, dig a little deeper on, like, what the issues you worked through were? Okay, so do you...
With the issues were what, sorry?
Like, with working through your feelings without the medication.
Oh, yeah.
What feelings were you working with? I love feelings. Pardon? I love feelings. Yeah. I love talking about feelings. Let it hang out.
Yes. It was really, you know, I think the main issues, and I mean, my husband would probably kill me because I don't think I've ever actually really, well, we have vocalized it, but we don't meet eye to eye. So during the time of my early diagnosis, I really struggled to feel like he was supportive, and not in the way that, you know, he was always there. He's always, you know, but he would never ask me how I was feeling. He would never check in with me as much as I felt like he should have. And maybe I didn't vocalize as much as I should have. Obviously, there's always two parts to a story, you know, but I felt like his life continued as it had before we had our son. And here I was, you know, day in, day out, struggling every day. Now I'll get emotional about it. You know, struggling every day to sort of love this child that we had both wanted. And yet, you know, he would work late, he would go out with his buddies, he had hockey and baseball twice a week, and I could have created something, an outlet for myself. But when you're in it, you know, there's a bit of a, almost like a social anxiety, because it takes so much effort to get yourself out of the house that, you know, once my day was done, I was done. You know, I was ready to just be like, I just want to chill. I just want to put on the TV. And so, you know, people, you know, so that part was also my fault. But I think a lot of it came from that sort of lack of support. And a lot of it came from me feeling like a failure for not being able to breastfeed, whether I liked it, whether it worked, whatever the reason, I always felt sort of judged. And, you know, I'd try to go to these mom groups and, you know, all these moms would be, you know, beautifully breastfeeding so easily, you know, and I would whip out this bottle of pumped breast milk that no one seemed to care, you know, that I was pumping every, God, 3 hours, you know, around the clock, because I felt like I had to. So a lot of that sort of judgment and shame and guilt all kind of came wrapped around into sort of feeling like I'm not a good enough mom. I'm not meant to be a mom, you know, my patience would be short with both my son and my husband and my dog and, you know, and I would be, you know, and I didn't like the person that I was. And so I think the feelings really came from sort of a lack of support and sort of an internal judgment on myself. You know, you kind of have this idea. I mean, I went into my, you know, hospital pre-admission, you know, they make you fill a checklist here saying, you know, what do you hope you do? What's your plan for going home? And I was like, I'm going to do whatever works best for us. But that wasn't as easy when it actually was said and done to say, to give sort of, I don't even like saying giving up because that makes it sound like you failed, but to say, you know, breastfeeding isn't for me, or, you know, vocalizing to my husband, I need you here and you cannot go out. Cause I felt like, you know, we're adults. Like, we should be able to see that the other person is struggling and want to be here and want to be with your family. But instead, whatever reason, he felt he was giving me that. And I just didn't feel the same way. We would probably still disagree to this day. We still talk about it, you know, and he still says, I supported you. And I'm like, well, not, you know, in the way that I really needed you. Like, I needed him to see that I was struggling and say, okay, I'm going to take an extra week off, or I'm going to take a couple of vacation days, you know, and be here to help, you know. And so instead, I had to reach out to my mom, thank goodness. And when my sisters would come down, you know, they were really helpful. And I luckily found a really great group of girlfriends in the neighborhood that, you know, we would work, you know, meet up. And when our kids were losing it, you know, we could go really, and they became kind of my support system until things got a little bit easier for me. And sort of, I came out of it a little bit more. And then my husband and I's relationship sort of came back to what it was. And he sort of became more hands-on as well. But yeah, really that sort of guilt and kind of shame I felt, you know, for not loving mothering experience, I think, that nobody talks about because you don't ever see it, you know, until now, until I sort of was like, I'm going to become vocal about it. And all of a sudden, you know, all these sort of outlets opened up to me.
Yes, you have to know the secret handshake.
Yeah, just have to say it. And then people are like, oh, yeah, I had that too. And you're like, wait, why have we not known about this? You know, so many of my girlfriends, when I sort of let them know, you know, about the diagnosis, they were like, oh, my God, yeah, I think I had that too. But I think a lot more women probably feel similar feelings, but don't have either the resources or think about reaching out and saying, hey, are these normal feelings? And so they just cope, fortunately or unfortunately, on their own, you know. Because I remember at 6 weeks saying to one of my best friends, like, I don't feel I'm bonding with him. And she was like, oh my God, like, I didn't bond with my first baby till 6 months. And I'm like, well, why aren't we talking about this? You know, why isn't this something that someone says to me, hey, FYI, don't feel bad, this might happen, but it's all good, we've all gone, you know. It's just a kind of more open conversation we need to have, I think. Well, at least I try now. Before people have babies, I probably scare them. But
oh yeah, I tell people who are pregnant that I hated being pregnant.
Yes.
And I tell people with babies, I don't really like babies. I like my kids, but I like them much better when they hit like toddler stage.
Yes, or even just like, you know, I feel like I used to say, I think the newborn phase for me was probably the hardest. But now looking back, I wish I'd really focused on that more, because then they stop napping, they start talking, you know, and you're like, wait, no, I need you to go back to when you were kind of a blob on the floor and I could just drink my coffee and watch TV and you were playing and we were all happy, you know.
Yes.
Now it's like, mom, 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 you know. Each phase has their pros and cons.
Yes, that's why my husband likes to say that each phase lasts about as long as it should.
Mm-hmm,
because there's a lot of really cute preciousness with each phase, but there's also those challenges, and you can really only handle them for as long as you can.
Exactly, yeah, until you reach your breaking point.
So all these feelings you worked through with therapy, how did that work? Were you going to therapy once a week? Did you write during the week? Like, what tricks worked for you?
I was going probably every, for the first little while, I think I actually still only went like every 2 to 3 weeks. And then as things got a little bit easier, like now I go kind of every 4 weeks. We did a lot of sort of almost like as simple as pros and con lists, kind of, you know, like, you know, if this were to happen, what's the worst thing that can happen, and kind of writing it out, so that, because I would kind of become what they call sort of catastrophizing, you know. I make it sort of be the worst thing that could ever happen, but it could be like, oh, he doesn't nap, and then it would be like, oh, well, now we get so wrapped up, you know, then he won't be happy, and then he'll be crying, and I won't have a break, and, you know, but they wouldn't be huge things that could be the worst thing that could ever happen, but I would just get so in my head. And so we would often do a lot of like, okay, you know, he won't nap, so what does that mean? What are you, you know, what's the worst thing that could happen? And then being able to visualize it and seeing, you know, oh, like, well, we just won't get a break, but maybe that means I go drive him around in the car and then I can go get coffee and then he sleeps in the car. You know, it sort of kind of brought down my anxiety. And I think, you know, we worked a lot. I mean, it's now been a little bit longer, so it's hard to remember a full back. But even now, sometimes, you know, when my anxiety gets the best of me, you know, we sort of work on, okay, you know, focus on things that you like to do for yourself. Make sure that you're giving yourself the time. So, you know, the gym was a huge outlet for me. So, you know, my therapist was really encouraging about, you know, the gym luckily had a daycare. So, you know, I had tried mom and baby gyms, but they didn't work for me because I wanted a bit of a break from him. So, which also sounds terrible, but it's not, it's just the reality. You know, so that was sort of my hour. And I felt like if I could get that hour in, that allowed me to feel like, okay, I've at least had a little bit of time to myself. And that was really important to me, especially with my husband working later and not getting home till, you know, 6:30 or 7 o'clock. It was, you know, Sully and I all day, you know. So, you know, getting outside was really big. So trying to get outside as much as possible for a walk really did wonders for me. And I even now find, you know, my day is sort of set off on the right tone if, you know, I at least have some sort of, even if it's 10 minutes, you know, may not work out the best if you've got a crying baby, but just getting out and doing, you know, getting out in that fresh air really helped. And then really, you know, I'd say just talking out my feelings, really trying to be aware of how I was feeling and waking up on days and saying, okay, I know today's going to be a hard day, and kind of giving myself that grace to just allow myself, you know, it doesn't have to be a day where we go out and do a ton of stuff. Maybe we just hang out at home and, you know, kind of letting a lot of that go. I still struggle with that now, I would say. I say now it's almost peaked more that I feel, you know, less okay about not being this sort of perfect mom, you know, being attentive all the time and making sure he's engaged and all the activities we're doing. You know, some days we all just need a chill day. Like, you know, I feel like sometimes the expectation gets to be too much. So it was really working on a lot of self-care and sort of bringing my, you know, if I felt like my anxieties were getting high, bringing them back down to sort of a realistic idea and saying, you know, and I was really big on control. I think I had a lot of sort of obsessive kind of control needs, which I did before I had Sully anyway. You know, I really like, so it was always making sure, you know, yes, you can map out a few things in your day, but if they don't go that way, how are you going to cope with that? And can you get over that? Instead of sort of just being like, oh my God, the, you know, this is the worst thing in the world. It was sort of like, okay, if you don't get to the gym, what else could you do that's going to help you feel good in the day? You know, say he woke up and he was sick and he couldn't go to the gym. It was like, okay, we can go for a walk. So sort of having other plans that allowed that flexibility. I was very, very rigid in my thinking in terms of what needed to be done each day. That comes from my amazing type A personality. And obviously you can't do that with a kid, right? Your kid dictates what you do. And so it was really learning, like, maybe I can't spend an hour at the gym. Maybe it's going for 30 minutes, or maybe it's going outside for a walk, and that's got to be okay. And sort of readjusting my expectations to sort of what my new reality was.
So where are you today? You're back at work?
Yeah. So I went back to work when my son was a year.
Okay.
So we get a year off. Yeah.
And you said you're happy to be back at work.
Yeah. So my son's in daycare and I work 4 days a week, which is a perfect sort of balance. So I have, hence today, every Tuesday off, which allows me to have a really big window of self-care time. I don't know if I ever will ever say I'm fully recovered, because I always feel like I want to continue to work on myself. So I still go to therapy every 4 weeks. We don't necessarily always talk about, you know, kids struggles. We might talk about, I don't know, other stuff going on, just the anxieties that I'm having. But I think, you know, I feel day to day overall better. I think there are some days that are a little bit harder, and I miss a lot of times when those days are harder because so many days have been better. Whereas before they were all bad, so I always knew they were going to be bad, you know. Whereas now when things get a little lighter in your sort of mood, the harder days seem harder, if that makes any sense, because you're kind of not used to them anymore. So I would say I'm sort of not quite out of the darkness yet, or the forest, but I'm on the verge, you know. They're much more happier days and enjoyable days than there are sort of sad and tired and overwhelmed days. But I don't know. I think there'll be a long time before I sort of let myself kind of get over what happened.
And that's okay. You know?
Yeah.
It's
hard though.
it is hard. Like, I wish I could just snap my fingers for everyone. Like, wave the wand and everyone felt good right now. But
yeah.
We're moms now. Like, we weren't moms before this started, and there's a lot to learn. And it's great, I think, that you're still giving yourself the grace to keep recovering and keep improving.
Yeah. I mean, I think the hardest thing for me has been sort of letting go of a lot of that guilt that it did happen, you know? I think I work really hard to not beat myself up, but, you know, I know, like, my therapist could tell you how many times she's like, you have to just kind of not move on, but, you know, you have to just sort of give yourself that acceptance that it happened, but you've worked through it and you're on your way out, you know? But I think we, as moms potentially who have experienced it, kind of hold on to a bit of that guilt and that worry that, oh my gosh, could it come back? Could I, you know, somehow have a relapse? And so we sort of hold on to that. I feel, I shouldn't speak for anybody else. I feel like, you know, you sort of hold on to that fear in order to sort of keep yourself in check. That's how I feel. I feel like I'm kind of not allowing myself to let go because I'm always fearful that it'll happen again and I won't have been prepared and sort of allowed, oh, it sounds so awful, I'm going to be upset. You know, allow yourself that happiness, you know, you feel kind of like, you know, you don't want to let yourself be happy because it's almost like you didn't deserve it, you know, which is awful. It's awful to even speak it. And I know it's not true, you know, it's just how your brain kind of tricks you, you know, that's an awful feeling to feel.
The hard part.
See, I told you I'd cry.
I know, and I told you you'd make me cry. The hard part about doing this as a podcast is I know that, like, you're saying this, and then people are going to be listening to the show, and there's so many moms in different parts of the world, like, nodding their heads. But they're just not in the room with you and able to give you that feedback right now. But you're speaking words that someone wasn't even able to speak for herself yet.
Yeah, and that's hard, I think, you know. I think that's a hard thing to admit, you know, because you want to feel better. You want to feel, and so you move forward, you do what you can, you know, but somehow, you know, and maybe it's just not my time yet, you know. Maybe it might be another 2 or 3 or 4 years before I finally can let go of that. And I do hope it comes one day, you know, where it almost is like, not that it never happened, because I think it actually really made me become, as much as it was terrible, made me become the person I am today. I'm so much more vocal about my feelings and my emotions and speaking out about, you know, mental health issues and the stigma around it and making sure my friends feel supported. You know, I think before I would have maybe been naive and I would have, if I hadn't gone through it, I wouldn't have been so kind of in tune with making sure that other women don't feel so alone. And I've learned so much about myself. And in a way, I wouldn't have had to go through that, right? I wouldn't have learned all that as deeply as I had if I didn't have this experience. So as much as I, you know, sort of keep myself in this sort of negative fear, I also feel so grateful for the experience to enable me to have been able to say that out loud and be able to come to a place where I can just own those emotions and be okay with them and be say, you know what, they're still there, but that's okay. And they don't define me. They just sort of make me a little bit better because I have to work through them and I have to get better, you know? So it's kind of weird. I don't know. It's a weird kind of way to look at it, but I don't know, in a way I'm sort of grateful.
Oh, I'm really grateful that I had this. I wasn't a person who I didn't let myself really feel negative feelings. Like,
right.
And I really pushed them away. I felt them as quickly as I could. And then it was like about powering through to the other side. And so this whole experience has like really just cut me like wide open to feelings. And it's almost like I'm learning a new, like, it's not even learning a new language. It's just learning a whole new way to exist.
That's it. It's like learning a whole new part of you that you didn't even know could exist, you know?
And it's like I'm glad that part's part of my life now, but it is tough. I mean, like, mm-hmm. I was laying in bed this morning and I woke up a little early and I just suddenly started thinking about how one of my friend's girls are turning 5 soon and how mm-hmm. her mom died like right after her babies were born. And I just started crying in bed for like no reason, like, well, for that reason. But it's like, and I was thinking like, I'm so grateful that I can actually feel these feelings and let mm-hmm. this out for other people. But for it sure. also means sometimes it's 5:40 in the morning, the kids are still asleep, and I'm getting all weepy in bed just because something mm-hmm. was on my mm-hmm. mind. And yeah, that's not what I didn't live that way for 34 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I know. And it's, you know, and it's funny because I often will hear some of my friends sort of say, you know, maybe wouldn't say it, but even like my sisters will sort of just acknowledge how much more outspoken I've become or more aware of, you know, my feelings. Not that I don't think I was before, but I just was sort of the same. I was emotional for sure. But I wouldn't sort of look into why I had those emotions. I'd sort of have them come mm-hmm. and then I would deal with them and then they would pass, you know. But instead of sort of digging deep and saying, okay, why am I feeling this way? Checking in, saying, you know, your postpartum's kind of acting up. You know, you've had a good day, but now you're having a bad day. What is it that you need? Like, are you tired? Did you not, you know, get enough me time? Did you not, you know, eat well? Yes, or whatever it might be, you know, and sort of really trying to focus on why those emotions are coming out in such a way. And now I feel like I'm just constantly checking in with myself, you know, and making sure, like, are you okay? Are you gonna, you know, like even this morning, like I lost it on Sully and I felt terrible, you know, and I still right now I'm kind of beating myself up over it, you know, because you're always kind of worried, like, was that postpartum or was that just like a raging toddler that you needed to rage to, you know, mm-hmm. and probably it was more ragey toddler that was causing raging mommy. But without that, you know, I wouldn't have that insight to sort of check and say, okay, you know, are you doing okay? Is today going to be a hard day? Like, do you need to do a little bit more for yourself today to kind of bring you back to, you know, sort of centered? And thank goodness, you know, I'm lucky to have sort of this day to myself, you know. So I went to acupuncture, I went to the gym, like I'm going to therapy later, I get to talk to you, you know, all these things that help me sort of bring me back to who I am on those days that are a little bit harder for whatever reason, you know.
So those are, that sounds like, I was going to ask you, you beat me to the question about self-care. So like things like acupuncture yeah. and gym. And is doing this postpartum advocacy work also part of your self-care?
Yeah, you know, it kind of fell into my lap by accident. You know, when I was the first year, I remember, you know, I had seen sort of, I mean, I even tried to sign up for a postpartum support group in Ottawa. And I remember they said you had to meet with a counselor first. And because I was already meeting with my therapist, it was almost like a roadblock. I just wanted to go and chill with other moms, you know? I didn't want to kind of feel like I was being interviewed to go into the support group. And I know that's a process. And I'm so thankful that there are even community resources out there. So don't get me wrong. Right. You know, but I felt like at that time I wasn't ready mm-hmm. to rehash that story. And so I didn't go to these support groups. And then I remember seeing on Facebook about the climate of darkness. And, you know, and then I remember thinking, oh, that's cool, but not really feeling ready or not really feeling like it was something I wanted to do because I wasn't okay with my story yet. I wasn't there where I could really feel like I was out of it yet. And then I think I must have somehow still, like, I didn't even do anything with it. I just must have somehow still been able to see it on Facebook or something. And I saw last year that they were doing the climb again. And it was probably, I think it was only a week or 2 weeks before the actual climb. And I thought, you know what? I saw that there was no walk in Ottawa. And I thought, what a shame. There was one the year before. Like, what happened? You know, obviously it's hard to organize these things. So I'm sure it was just fell apart kind of, you know, naturally. And I thought, well, you know, I could do this. I could just, it doesn't have to be big. I could just say I'm doing it and raise some money and and go. And of course, and as soon as I signed up, I was like going to vomit. You know, I went down to my husband. He was working in the basement. I started crying, saying, oh my God, like, what have I done? You know, here I put this expectation. I'm like, do I really need sort of this other thing on my to-do list, you know, of all the sort of things that you put on yourself day to day? But it was beautiful. I only had, you know, two of my girlfriends show up. It was a beautiful day. They brought their kids. One of my amazing girlfriends also struggled with postpartum, so it was really kind of near and dear to her heart. So our husbands came, and my other girlfriend, who's amazing, showed up. And there was just three moms and their husbands and their babies. And we just went for a walk, and we talked, you know, a little bit about it, but we just talked about motherhood and the struggles. And I thought, you know, and I sort of said, oh, I'm a bit sad that this wasn't bigger. Now, I didn't reach out to anybody. Like, I put it on Facebook and Instagram. That's it. I just said, you know, here's my page. If you want to donate, if you want to come, like, I didn't, you know, there's some amazing team leaders right now who are doing amazing things. I'm just so envious of that ability to, you know, kind of really almost put it in like a full-time job. I'm not quite there yet. I'll get there one day. I'm working on it. But yeah, and so this year I thought, you know, why not? Let's do it again. And even if those three show up, you know, each year the word of mouth will get more. You know, I'm going to hopefully reach out to, you know, the local support groups in our city and just let them know that it's happening. You don't have to come. You know, like, I don't actually care. Sounds terrible. I don't care if people come, but I just want people to know that it's happening and it's going to continue to happen, whether, you know, we have three people or whether we have 500 people, because I still think me going and putting the word out there and even, you know, putting it on my Facebook or putting it on my Instagram allows other moms to say, hey, like, she has gone through this. Even if it's not to come and walk, but to know I've been through it, and maybe she's someone I can turn to if ever I feel that way. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So it's sort of like, yeah, I don't know. I don't need it to be more than what it was, but I'm so excited for what it could be. Like, already this year, I think I put the fundraising goal a little bit higher, and we've surpassed that. And I've started, what, 6 months ahead of time, you know, as compared to 2 weeks. So I just think, what are the possibilities? What could happen each year, and how can we sort of get better, you know?
Yeah, and it's like, I don't think it matters how big your event is. It's just, there's going to be some mom out there,
and that's it.
And she's going to see, wow, there's this many climbs going on in this many countries. Yeah. And it just doesn't matter if it's,
that's it,
how many people show up. It's just the fact that people are showing up.
And maybe that year, like, she was someone like me who couldn't do it that quite at that time, but maybe the next year or the year after, you know?
Right.
And, you know, hopefully it just keeps the word out there. You know, here in Canada, we're really lucky. We have, I think it's the end of January, January 31st, we have like a telephone company that supports like a mental health awareness day. And so, you know, all your tweets and all your texts and things like that, if you put a certain hashtag, goes towards this fundraising event. And it's sort of, I feel like, the same sort of thing. Like, if we keep it, that conversation going, it's all about conversation, you know, just being able to say, hey, everybody is affected by some sort of mental health, or even moms, you know, even if it doesn't feel like you struggled, maybe you had a little bit of struggle at the beginning and then it went away, or, you know, but you feel like you didn't quite get the connection or support you needed. It's sort of continuing that conversation and saying, you know, we're not going to forget just because the day has passed or just because the walk has passed. It's sort of like each year keeping that as a reminder to, you know, check in with yourself and make sure you're doing okay and reach out if you need support. So even if people don't come, it's kind of like, oh, Fiona's still talking about it. Fiona, you know, Fiona still put this on her Facebook. Like, it's obviously important. It's something, you know, so I feel like hopefully it kind of keeps the conversation going, I guess.
Yeah, and you don't know who you're pinging and who is going to remember and be like, oh, I can ask Fiona at some point.
Yes, exactly. Or I know she's someone that wouldn't judge me if I, like, told her my worst, awful feeling I ever had, you know, because we've all been there and we've all had those feelings too, you know. So just knowing it's, like, a non-judgment-free space, you know, someone to talk to. So, yeah, so hopefully, I mean, I hope that the two other girls that originally came will show up. Otherwise, it will be just me, and I'm fully happy to just walk by myself with my dog and my husband and my baby, and, you know, and that is what it is. But, you know, I'm excited to see how the conversation keeps going and seeing sort of what we can do and sort of move forward, you know?
Yeah. And I just heard you say something and I couldn't tell if I heard it right. Did you say husband or ex-husband?
Husband.
Oh, husband. Okay. And I don't know if that's my congestion or the Skype connection.
Some days he might be. No, I'm kidding.
I wanted to make sure I was clear on that so that no one else was having issue.
Whoa, that's a big bomb to drop in the end.
41 minutes into the interview. Oh, by the way.
We didn't make it. No, we made it. We worked through it.
That's awesome. So can I circle back to breastfeeding? What happened?
Yeah.
How long did you pump for?
I pumped for 6 months. And so in Canada, they don't quite have the same support for pumping like you guys do in the States, because I know you guys have to go back to work so early. So here, you're pumping wherever you're pumping. There's no rooms. There's no, you know, sofas. It's like you pump in the car. You pump on the highway. I've pumped on the side of the road at a farm before. You just pump wherever. And so I pumped for 6 months. So I breastfed very excruciating for 6 weeks. I had to use a nipple shield. He didn't have a good latch. I saw lactation consultants and, you know, did everything I possibly could. And at 6 weeks, I just thought, you know what? This is not for me. I'm hating being a mom. And I remember saying this to my mom herself. I said, Mom, like, I said, I'm going to give up breastfeeding. She sort of said, oh, Fiona, you know, give it some more time. I said, I don't like being a mom because of this. Like, I don't want to do, if I could be happier because I knew I was always anxious about how much he was eating. Was he getting enough? He'd be on the boob for, you know, an hour and a half. And I would never go anywhere. He's just constantly feeding because he wasn't really eating. We didn't have a good framework. We didn't have a good team relationship. And I should have known, because he spent a short time in the ICU just for, because he was a C-section and he had issues with fluids in his lungs. It wasn't anything major. But he took a bottle there because, you know, he would practice breastfeeding and he was like, you know, 24 hours old. And I remember the nurse saying, like commenting and saying, no baby takes a bottle as happily as this kid. And that should have been like my major aha moment to be like, this kid just loves a bottle. He just wants a bottle. He's happy with a bottle. This is, you know, and so we kind of did a hybrid of all things. So I would try to breastfeed, then I would pump, and then we would give him a bottle of the pumped milk. And so we did that for a few weeks. Then I tried just breastfeeding. And then at 6 weeks, I was like, you know what? My one girlfriend who is from Canada but was living in Boston at the time, she had been pumping. She was the only other person I knew at the time who was pumping. No one else. Everyone just did bottle or breastfeeding, because obviously pumping is like the worst of all three, you know, it's like doing everything that, you know. And so she was really great. She was super supportive and she sort of helped me through it. And so I made enough milk. That was the struggle too. You know, I know a lot of women often, you know, and their relationship with breastfeeding because they don't make enough milk, but I was making amazing supply. And so I felt this extreme guilt for not being able to give that supply to my son. Like even the lactation consultant would say, oh, you'll have no problem. Like, look at that milk supply, you know? So that gets ingrained in your head when all of a sudden you do have a problem and you're like, well, wait, is it me? Or, you know, are we not working? And so it kind of just became this burden of guilt that I had where I didn't love breastfeeding. I didn't like breastfeeding in public. Absolutely not. It just wasn't for me. And I think that's totally reasonable. And no one should ever be shamed for that. That's just not for everyone. I'm always like so excited when I see women just whipping their breasts out. Like, good for you girls. I wish I was like that, but I'm not. And I can't overcome that at the same time that I'm struggling to even feed my child, let alone, you know, you've got like a cover on you and it's all just, you know, so insane. And so at 6 weeks, I started pumping, and things just seemed, at least part of that stress of what I feel attributed to my postpartum, got easier because I had the bottles. I had, you know, express breast milk. I had formula if I needed it. We kind of did a hybrid. My husband could then start feeding him, which was such an amazing space for me to kind of let go of a lot of that, you know, mom and baby time. You know, he felt more involved, and I could go and, you know, go to the gym and then go shopping if I wanted to without, you know, without worrying. So yeah, it was, you know, so after that, it just became a lot easier.
Yeah, I think that's, I'm so glad you shared all that, because so many moms struggle with breastfeeding and pumping, and it's just such a personal part of our journeys, and I hate that it's like filled with so much judgment these days.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, I remember someone commenting, and I don't know if this is actually true, but, you know, I feel like here in Canada, for whatever reason, it's just not as accepted. You know, there's a large pro breastfeeding movement, obviously, with, you know, healthcare providers, and obviously, you know, that whole breast is best. And, you know, I'm part of a group of that we're sort of creating sort of a checklist for new moms of sort of things to look for. And we've really been focusing on sort of making sure, even though that is sort of, you know, what we have to go by, but making sure that moms know that, you know, what are your other alternatives? Like, have it on hand. Don't feel bad if that's not going to work out for you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've covered a lot today. Is there anything I missed?
Yeah. No, I think that's it, really.
So I'm going to post in show notes for everyone listening. I'll post your Climb Out of Darkness, the general link,
awesome. And Team Thank Ottawa. You.
Is there anywhere else I should be sending people for you, or?
I guess, I mean, if they want to reach out over Facebook, that's fine too. I don't really know how it works to find people. You just type in my name, I guess, or Instagram. I don't even know. Are they even called handles? I don't even know what you do to look for someone. But if you want to try to reach out, do your best to find me, I guess. And then,
well, you know, they you can know, always email me and I can put them in touch.
Yes, sure.
And I've had that happen before, guys.
Great. I'm like, I don't really know how to do it.
I have done matchmaking.
I'm not technologically inclined.
I've matchmade listeners to guests. So
perfect. So if anybody, you know, if anybody ever wants any kind of just a place to chat, then absolutely they can reach out anytime. I'm always here.
Well, that's so sweet. Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Fiona.
Thank you. This has been such a pleasure.
So that's it for this week. Thank you, Fiona, so much for coming on the show. I loved talking to you. If you are a mom listening, or a dad, dads get, well, you don't get a maternal mood disorder, but you can get postpartum depression. I suppose we should call it a paternal mood disorder. So any moms or dads or anyone who's been touched by postpartum depression or a maternal mood disorder who has a story to share, and if you'd like to be on the show, email me, Courtney@ppdadventures.com. I'm either scheduling interviews or taking names for when I'm ready to schedule interviews again. I don't see myself taking a break again anytime soon. I know I took a long break last summer and fall, but that was because I was giving birth to the book, my third child. And now that I've done that, I don't see the need to like take a huge break from the show. I love doing this. I feel like it just, these stories inspire me, and it makes me feel connected to more people, and I just feel like called to do this work. And so I'm so glad that I have the means to do it. And so if you're out there and you feel called to share your story on the show, email me again, Courtney@ppdadventures.com. I'd love to have you. Show notes are available at ppdadventures.com. Are you seeing a theme here? And I'll have all the links for Team Ottawa and the Climb Out of the Darkness in case you are curious or interested in joining a climb near you. Postpartum depression and all maternal mood disorders can feel incredibly lonely and isolating, but please know you are not alone. There are thousands of people suffering with you right now, and there's countless more who have suffered before or who will be suffering. You can and will make a full recovery and get through the darkness, and even on the other side, find yourself a little wiser and more empathetic, and might, like me, find yourself enjoying life more than you ever did before. I love you, and I hope you have a great week.